We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Dave McMenamin from ESPN.com. He joins on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. What's up, buddy? How are you?
Hey, Chris. I started my day listening to you and Joe Vardon on a little podcast action, and here we are talking. It's wow. It's like we're talking to a celebrity. What's up?
Well, technology is amazing. That's number one. Number two, when it comes to me, we've got to use the term celebrity loosely. And number three, apologies for too much me in one day.
It was a lot of Kemba Walker talk.
Yes.
But also, I knew you were guest hosting today.
Yep.
But I thought Fox was on the show, but apparently there's a LeVar Ball guest host today also, because someone was just talking about beating Michael Jordan 1-on-1.
No, that's not what I did not say. I'd beat Michael Jordan. I said I'd score a bucket on Michael Jordan.
You'd score a bucket
on
him.
You said three buckets, actually.
Yeah, I think three is reasonable.
I do. Obviously, you were a professional athlete, and myself and Fedor were athletes on much lower scale. But confidence is the biggest X factor in all of sports, so I applaud you for having it.
You don't think I'd get a bucket on 55-year-old Jordan?
If he had money on the game, you wouldn't.
I think I'd get a bucket. I don't think I'd beat him because I think his jumper is still pretty good. But
yeah,
but I think I'd get a bucket.
I mean, he has the reach of, you know, what, 6'10", 6'11"?
Yeah. Yeah, I just don't. I still think I'm way quicker than him, and I think I'd be able to get.
You are quick. I mean, I watch your Instagram videos. You still get after it. I saw you can get up and get rim. I know you've dropped some weight. It's looking good. I applaud the confidence, but I'm going to have to go MJ on this one.
Still throwing down two hands, Dave. Come on now.
It's all power to you.
I'm getting a bucket. Screw you guys.
You're convinced of this still.
Yeah.
Is there anything that anybody could say to convince you otherwise?
On this subject?
Yeah.
No.
Well, good for you.
No.
I agree with Dave. Good for you. The confidence is there.
There's
That's
not.
Really, really important.
You guys act like I'm saying I could beat the guy.
No.
He's still very, very good at basketball, I'm sure.
Yeah.
At 55 with a beer gut and could probably beat most people in the world, but I'm getting a bucket.
Somebody else who's really good at basketball is LeBron James.
Okay. There we go.
No.
Yeah. What do you got, Chris?
See, that's my transition there, Dave. You make the case for Cleveland. Curious, is there anything that you've heard? I feel like when it comes to LeBron, we all have our belief going into this process, right, of the way that we're leaning. Is there anything that you've heard, anything that you've seen that has altered that for one reason or another?
No, I mean, listen, I had some conversations immediately after the finals,
right,
with people that I would trust to, you know, talk to in order to inform my opinion about how this thing's going to play out. And it just became abundantly clear that Cleveland was not off the table. This was not a foregone conclusion as to LeBron James definitely walking this summer. And so, you know, the goal of the piece that I wrote today, or I wrote, you know, last week and was published today, was why is Cleveland a real possibility outside of just being Northeast Ohio, where, you know, we all know LeBron's story coming from being a kid from Akron, but why? And you start to stack the case together and compare it to what else is out there. And there's, you know, there's logic behind it. Because if he wants to care about his family and care about winning, he actually has the opportunity to do both those things. If you consider the way the Cavs have been able to go into every season the last 4 years and look at it like a fluid roster. Like, they are not looking at their playoff roster in training camp. They are actively trying to change it every single year to get as good as they can by April 15th. And if that would be their same mentality going into next year, which I totally believe it will be, there is a track record, a proven track record, that the Cavs could be his best shot to play with the best roster.
You think it would be just a 1-1 then, Dave?
I do. And then I was even further, I guess, I felt stronger about that opinion after the Magic Johnson press conference today, where I don't know if you guys were maybe on the air and you didn't hear it, but this happened an hour ago or so ago. Magic Johnson said, I look at this as a two-summer proposition. And he said, if I don't get my guys in two summers, I'm going to step down. Junior Buss won't have to fire me because I will prove that I don't know how to do my job. Mm-hmm. And by him opening the door to the two-summer proposition, I think it lends credence to the possibility of both LeBron in Cleveland and Paul George in Oklahoma City signing one-on-ones in their respective cities.
Dave McMenamin, ESPN.com, joining on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. When you talk about the Cavs and their situation, Dave, do you think there's something that they have to do prior to LeBron making his free agency commitment, like an agreement that they have to make with him of a move or two that they are going to make or can make, and they present it as, here's the thing that we can do to improve the roster? And if so, what do you think it would take?
Well, I hope that they either... I hope they don't make the move beforehand because I don't know if they'd be too smart, but I think to consult with them and say, hey, here's what we're targeting with our taxpayer mid-level exception. Mm-hmm. Here are several trades that we think we could get done in July. Here are some trades that we think we might be able to get done in December when the guys who sign in July, their contracts become tradable. Here are trades we think we can get done in February. Here are guys we think are going to be buyout candidates, and we would like to add to our team. Literally, like, have everything down to the cross T's and the dotted I's to explain to him a clear-cut plan, and then just remind him that, hey, by the way, we've spent more money than any other team by a wide margin the last 4 years that you've been here, and that's our intention to continue to do so. And when you get down to it, that's the way you actually win this league. You got to pick the right players, you got to get talent, but you got to be willing to continue to spend even when there's punitive luxury taxes. And that's what they've done. And, of course, all the other ancillary things about, his life here that he's quite comfortable with, they have going for them as well.
How many teams do you think are realistic options for LeBron this offseason?
Two.
So not
because
Philly?
No, I mean, I don't think like they have a snowball's chance in hell.
Sure.
I think there will be a formal dialogue either between LeBron and them or Rich Paul and them on his behalf. But I think there's a problem here. One, they need to retain those shooters, and there's no guarantee there. Two, the core of the team is not ready to win right now. If you look at NBA history, now you could say Ben Simmons is Magic Johnson, and Magic Johnson won a championship in his first 3 years, so guess what? They are ready to win right now. And maybe you'd be right, but that's the exception in NBA history. Houston had to completely revamp their roster, and who knows if they can find somebody to take Ryan Anderson, and does that mean that you lose Clint Capela in order to get LeBron, and you would lose Trevor Ariza and P.J. Tucker, and does that team just not have the same special sauce that it had before? And then, of course, the Lakers scenario is they have the possibility because they have the flexibility and the cap space to make something major happen, but they need to make something major happen. And I used to cover the Lakers on a day-in, day-out basis. Basically, ever since I left, every summer they've been trying to make something major happen, and guess what's happened every summer? They haven't. And so it's a lot harder to actually make happen than we really want to believe, I think.
Dave McMenamin, ESPN's our guest. Dave, so if LeBron signs early, right, like Wendy thinks it could happen as early as like early next week, is that a good thing, good sign for the Cavs, or a bad sign?
He could sign 3 weeks from now or 4 weeks from now. As long as he signs with Cleveland, that's a good sign. But
Monday he signs with X team. Is that the Cavs or is it somebody else? Like, does it help the Cavs? Because my estimation is, a lot of moves probably don't happen right in the next few days. I think that he'd maybe be signing with the team that hasn't made the moves quite yet.
Well, one, I'll say, and I've already said this on SportsCenter, I think Brian's timeline is probably a pretty good hunch, because I spoke to someone who, is in LeBron's camp, and basically he's off until July 5th. And so part of me thinks, like, we'll know by like July 6th and that person will go back to work, right? Now, beyond that, it just kind of depends on how you think it will go. Like, I don't know if I have the instinct here. Will LeBron say July 1st, I'm going to L.A., and, hey, guess Paul, it's really happening. I'm going to be the first domino. You come, you follow me. If he feels that he needs to give that nudge, or does he want to have someone else be the one to be the leader and he follows, you know, or is it going to be simultaneous? Like, so I guess my long-winded answer is I don't really have a sense of how the timing would affect the Cavs' chances. Mm-hmm.
Dave, does his June 29th decision do anything one way or the other?
I would be pretty dramatically surprised if he was to opt in, because he loses leverage and he understands leverage. And even if he only intends to stay for one more year, why not opt out and sign a 1+1 deal? You get a little bit of a raise, first of all. And second of all, you give yourself some leverage because you do say that, you know what, like, hey, if you want me next year, I'm under the books. Like, better make sure we manage this roster the right way. If he just opts in, the only way he has leverage is with the no trade clause. And so basically all it is, well, you can't get rid of me for this year. That's the only leverage he has. So I would be pretty surprised if he opted in, but, you know, we'll see how this plays out.
If LeBron comes back to Cleveland, is Colin Sexton still around?
That's a great question, Chris. I think when the Cavs drafted him and identified him, they believe he has what it would take to play alongside LeBron. Mm. But I think they also know that there are players out there that would be far more better served to compete for a championship starting next year with the type of current prime left that it would be worth giving up some with that much upside of a Colin Sexton, that they would go for it. But, you know, one player for sure, Paul George, right? Mm-hmm. If there's any, I think they would give about just anything outside of LeBron to get Paul George on this roster. Yep. If they could make that happen, because they know that that's someone that LeBron has identified he wants to play with. But, you know, would you do it for a Kemba Walker? Mm. You know, would you do it for, you know, I don't think he's available. Would you do it for CJ McCollum? Would you do it for DeAndre Jordan? The answer is probably yes to all those, but I think Cavs front office would have a harder time swallowing it.
So if he goes somewhere else, let's say hypothetically he goes to the Los Angeles Lakers, is that because he feels like the team that he could construct could realistically compete with Golden State, or because he feels like the team that he could realistically construct could compete better against Golden State than what he had here in Cleveland?
I think part of it would be a recognition that this is not going to be a one-year solution.
Gotcha. Okay.
And because there, you know, one thing you can say about the Lakers, not only this summer they have more flexibility, but they are better set up in the years to come to continue to acquire talent or continue to have young talent in their stead that they would be easily or easier to flip than the Cavs can with what they have. I'm not so sure that the Golden State thing is obviously a consideration, but yeah. Part of the what makes this situation so unique is I really don't believe there's any situation that he can find himself in this summer where he says, I have that much better of a chance against Golden State than any other situation. You know, like some people think, oh, it's Houston because they went to a game 7 and Chris Paul got hurt. Mm-hmm. Well, not really, because Golden State was messed up all playoffs. If you want to read into the comments that David West made, saying that there's a lot of stuff you guys don't know about, you know, I've talked to people around the league who think that was referring to, you know, some unrest between Kevin Durant and how he fit in with that team. And somehow they got through it, and that's usually those things happen, and then the team gets stronger from it, right?
Yep.
You know, Howard Beckwith, that great story about Draymond Green and Steve Kerr used to be each other's necks, and now they are part of the backbone of what the Golden State Warriors are. And so the Houston Rockets looked a lot closer to the Warriors than, in my estimation, they really were. And so that's, again, just getting back to the fact that I don't think going to the Lakers this summer or staying with the Cavs this summer, they are that close. Either of those teams are that close to the Warriors, and they're going to have to, like, fill in around the margins between July and the trade deadline in February in order to literally, like, get every single advantage you can to try to shorten that gap between the two teams.
Dave, the last line in your article, I screenshot it, tweeted it out because I thought it was fascinating, because you talk about how LeBron walked off the court after game four, greeted his boys, his mom, his wife, and didn't like acknowledge the fans or the crowd, and he just kind of went to the locker room. You said maybe there was no need for him to say goodbye just yet. Is that, should we read anything into that, or is that just kind of a nice way to end the story with a nice little tease?
Yeah, I mean, it was just an observation. Yeah. It's something I sat on a little bit, because before he even went out the tunnel, he was subbed out of the game by Ty Lue with, I don't know, like, quite, that was a disaster of a game, but what, three minutes ago or something like that? And the crowd was acknowledging with a standing ovation, and he went and, I think, gave some sort of acknowledgement to all five Warriors players before going to the bench. He didn't wave his hand to the crowd. I'm not saying he had to. I mean, he's processing a final sweep and his sixth finals loss. I get it. But if he was really going, throw your hand up, right? Like, you have some sort of moment. Like,
sure.
Tim Duncan, right, when he played his last game with the Spurs, no one knew it was going to be the last game of the Spurs. I thought maybe it was going to be the last game of the Spurs. And when he walked up the court, he threw his finger up, you know, threw his right hand up in the air. I mean, at that point, he said he wasn't sure whether he was going or not, but he just acknowledged the crowd, right?
Mm-hmm.
Again, I mean, I'm not using that observation to base my whole story around it. It was more of, hey, maybe there's more to come. Maybe there's more to see here with LeBron in Cleveland.
Everybody's doing their percentage chance of where. So how would you have it? You said it's down to two, Cleveland, L.A. What's the percent that it's Cleveland? What's the percent it's L.A., do you think?
Well, I mean, I know Brian Windhorst went 51, 40, and 9. But just because he didn't, I don't think everyone's doing it. What's your percentage chance?
Mine, personally?
Yeah. You give me first.
All right. I had the other day 53, 45, and how much do I have left over? 12? Is that right?
Wait. Yeah, two. You got two left.
Two left over. Two. Two left over for Philly. Outside, 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 outside chance. But I do 53
LA. LA. Cleveland, too, or
Yeah. 53 LA? Yeah.
This is such a cop-out, but I'm going to go 50-50.
Come on! You can't even do a 50.5?
I'm going to go 50-50.
It's just two teams, right, Dave?
I think I would be very surprised, almost the degree of shocked, if it wasn't one of those two teams.
All right.
All right, buddy.
Dave, great stuff. Good
no
article
50.2,
today,
50.3, no lean one.
You carry the one. I don't know, guys.
I know this much, Dave. I'm scoring a bucket on you.
Oh, boy.
Oh, gosh. Okay. All right.
Let me know when we can get down.
All right. Well, after free agency.
Sounds good.
Thanks
man.
For joining, man.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, bye, guys.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.